This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Larry Hale. Larry is the director of the Center for, the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service in the General Services Administration. How'd I do?
Perfect. You got it exactly right.
Great. Well, Larry, great. It's great to have you on the show. Looking forward to the conversation. We'll start with the big picture question in the background. What is this? The off of the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services.
Well, Roger, thank you for having me on your show. Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services is a combination of services that are aimed at providing vital government services. We sometimes nickname it as good for government, and especially saving our customers money, trying to do things in a shared services way so that the customer agencies don't have to duplicate those processes, and we're able to do them efficiently, effectively, and save them money. So some of those services are, for instance, the U.S. Access personal identification verification, PIV cards, Smart Buy, which is software managed and acquired on the right terms, strategic sourcing initiative to save our customers money on the software that they need. And then the security services. We have cybersecurity, information assurance, risk management framework. And one of our most exciting initiatives right now is cloud computing. We're heavily into procurement of cloud computing in support of the cloud initiatives of the administration.
Well, hey, Larry, and those are all topics we're going to touch on through the course of the show for you listening, you out there in the listening audience. But first, I just wanted to get some of your background that you've introduced your organization and, you know, the things you guys are working on. So how did you come to GSA?
This is actually my second time with GSA, but the first time I came straight out of the Navy. My last few years in the Navy, I was into cybersecurity. I was on the joint staff in the information assurance division. And I was also working as a Navy officer at FBI headquarters in the National Infrastructure Protection Center. So we were heavily into critical infrastructure protection and cybersecurity. And at that time, GSA was running at the time I retired from the Navy, GSA was running the Federal Computer Incident Response Center, the FedCIRC. And I actually came to GSA in 2001 and was at the FedCIRC when DHS was formed 2 years later. The FedCIRC became what is now US CERT. And so I moved to DHS, spent a few years at DHS in cybersecurity and communications, and also a couple of years out in industry. I was the CISO of a Fortune 500 IT company. So I've been on both sides of the government procurement operation. I've seen it from the industry side, and came back to GSA. After some time in DHS, I was excited about the opportunity to come to GSA and target those areas that I mentioned in the introduction, those areas where we can do things in a way that many government agencies can benefit from these common services that we provide.
Sort of, you know, that's the idea of like leveraging, you know, your services that you provide across the board. You know, when your time at DHS, that's interesting, and I do recall, and last week we had Nick Nyack on the show talking about the Department of Homeland Security, but one of the things we talked about is the challenges of trying to pull together all those, different organizations. And I remember when the organization you were with, the GSA, was part of GSA and then transitioned. Just looking at cybersecurity and that sort of thing, what were your biggest challenges? What remain some of the biggest challenges?
At the time when we first formed US CERT, one of the biggest challenges was getting timely information, incident information from agencies. So it was very important for DHS to put together this unified view and understand what was going on, because an incident could be an isolated incident in one agency, or it could be an indicator of a broad-based attack against the entire government. So one of the biggest challenges was putting together that ability and having the reporting from the agencies. And I'm happy to say that they've made tremendous progress with their programs in order to be able to be in a much better position to do that now.
Yeah, so I want to tease this out a little bit too. It's like, so you know, what was the drive? Was it really that opportunity to serve in a different manner, like across government in a different way than at DHS, that you know pulled you back to GSA?
So one of the things we recognized, and I recognized at the time, is that every government agency doesn't have the ability to do it themselves. So take, for example, cybersecurity. Every agency can't have a full-up operating cybersecurity center with incident response that they man with government employees and have all the right tools and do it themselves. So there's a strong need for somebody to partner with industry where there's a tremendous amount of expertise in this area. And there are companies that provide those kind of services. And when the FedCERC moved from GSA to DHS, a lot of the cybersecurity expertise that GSA had, the outward-facing cybersecurity expertise, went to DHS with it. So while GSA has and continued to have very good cybersecurity people working on its own networks in the CIO shop, the customer-facing cybersecurity expertise went away. It went to DHS. Okay. And so one of my goals was to reestablish that back in GSA. So one of the first things I did when I came to what was in the Office of Infrastructure Optimization was turn it into Strategic Solutions and Security Services and bring back that security services piece. And so that we stood that up in 2009 and are establishing that customer-facing role to bring those cybersecurity capabilities, to have that shared services and economies of scale to help the agencies that don't have the resources and the ability to own their own and build their own.
Right. Well, that's such an important thing, it seems to me, Larry, because really, you know, the agencies, whether it's like, let's say, the National Science Foundation or NIH, for example, even like they have missions. They focus on, you know, curing diseases or, you know, science research or things like that. They can't take big parts of their budget, right, and dedicate it to cybersecurity. They've got to, in that case, the mission gets sacrificed. You know, the resources aren't there. So what you're talking about is leveraging across the entire government enterprise to be able to deliver those services to those agencies.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the other part of my organization, the Strategic Solutions, is the same concept. Our customer agencies, as you said, they need to have their expertise and their procurement expertise focused on their mission-specific areas. And the things that are common across government agencies, everybody uses the same kind of desktop systems generally, you know, 80-85%, same software, same operating systems, same office automation. GSA can do that so well and operate on behalf of the broad base of government agencies for the common systems. And we can do that shared services procurement while they take their specified resources and focus it on their own mission.
Yeah. So, and Larry, get back to I want to ask you about the Navy a little bit. How long were you in the Navy?
I was in the Navy for 20 years.
Oh, wow. So thank you for your service there as
Thank you.
So, and you worked in cybersecurity there. How'd you get into there?
I spent the first 16 years flying. I was a naval flight officer, flew P-3 Orions and anti-submarine warfare missions, and I loved every minute of it. It was the most fun and the most exciting. I love being around airplanes. You reach a point in your career where they send you to something like the Naval War College, and it's a great honor to go get your master's degree and start your leadership education and grooming for new things. And that was 1996. Information warfare was just coming out of the the secret world. Time magazine did a cover story on how vulnerable the USA was to information warfare. And it was a hot topic at the Naval War College. And I was really fortunate to study that there among the things I studied, and then went straight from there to the Joint Staff, to the Pentagon, to the Information Assurance Division, right when we started to do things. We started to establish the Joint Task Force for Cyber Network Defense. All kinds of activity was taking place during that time. And as I said, I got the opportunity while there to go from the Pentagon to FBI headquarters and work there for 2 years on critical infrastructure protection. So I kind of transitioned from flying to cybersecurity in that period of time. And then when I retired in 2001, went straight to GSA.
Well, right now we have to sort of retire in a certain sense by taking a break, Larry. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some cybersecurity in your background, and then we'll turn to talking about what your organization is up to in terms of SmartPi and USA Access as well. So you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Hale. Larry is the director of the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service in the General Services Administration. And Larry, when we in the first segment, you talked a little bit not just about your background, but you know what your organization does and some of the initiatives and. I think it's time to start going through those a little bit and talking a bit about those. So the first one I wanted to ask you about, what is USA Access?
Well, thanks, Roger. USA Access is a shared service that handles the enrollment and issuance of, it's commonly called HSPD-12 cards or PIV cards, Personnel Identification Verification. It's the civilian equivalent of the DoD CAC card.
Okay.
So it's basically the government ID card, but it's a identity management tool. It has strong authentication credentials built into the card. And what the US Access program does is we help agencies save money on complying with Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12, HSPD-12. So it's a mandate from the president that agencies, that government employees and contractors on site have to have this credential. It's used for access to the buildings, and it's used for logical access to information systems. And OMB recently reasserted that with a memo called 1111, OMB 1111. That's telling agencies, okay, we've been issuing these cards since 2007. They've got all this capability on them. OMB's reasserting it's time to start using them for physical access and logical access. It's not just a card that hangs around your neck that you flash to the guard as you walk past him. GSA buildings have automated systems where the credentials on the card are actually read automatically as you walk in.
Right, and then the doors open or whatever.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And then we use the same thing. We use it as a two-factor authentication to log onto our information systems. So it has the credential, it has the certificate, and then, you know, it's a two-factor. So you have something, you know, your PIN number, and you use that to log on instead of the old user ID and password, which is very vulnerable.
Right.
And easy to forget. So the U.S. Access Program provides these cards and these services to over 80 agencies, and we've got more than 600,000 credentials that we've issued. What I love about the U.S. Access Program is that it is a shared service. So from our largest customer, which can be an agency with hundreds of thousands of employees or with a couple of hundred thousand employees, down to literally a small board, a federal board that has maybe two full-time feds, they pay the same price. They get the card for the same price because we manage the economies of scale. And we publish our prices on the internet. It's transparent for everyone to see. And I challenge anyone, even in a very large agency, to beat our economies of scale, because we are next to DOD, which has over 2 million cards in circulation. We're the next biggest issuer of credentials with our 600,000.
And how long is this program, how long has that USA Access been in place now?
HSPD 12 was issued in 2004. We started issuing credentials in 2005. So that was in response to the Homeland Security Presidential Directive. One of the neat things I want to tell you about the about our program and about the use of the card is so GSA started to gather information within our own agency through our usage of the card to get into the buildings. And so you may have heard that GSA is planning to reduce its footprint of leased space in Washington. And as our headquarters gets renovated, we're going to put a lot more people back into headquarters. Part of the data that supports that is that we created metrics on how many people were actually coming into the buildings on any given day. There's a lot of reasons not to be in the office on any given day. You could be out meeting with customers, you could be teleworking, et cetera, et cetera. So based on the actual metrics of people coming in and using the building, they calculated that we could get the entire Washington GSA population of employees into our headquarters at 1800F using hoteling, using shared seats, shared workspace.
And that's down. That would be down from, I can think of off the top of my head, four other locations.
Yeah.
There's Crystal City, there's National Capital Region, 7th and D Street, right? And then there's the office out in Vienna, too, right?
There's Willowwood out in Fairfax.
Yeah.
There's multiple, multiple locations. Doing this and reducing those leases is saving GSA $28 million a year. $28 million a year, saving the taxpayers $28 million a year.
So you're telling me that's not just a security tool, it can be a management tool as well.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Hey, the next program, so we're going to do this like a checklist there, okay? It's like this is your test for the day, okay? The next one I'd like to talk a little bit about, and that's, I know it's in the FAR, I think it's mentioned in the FAR, but it's also a big software program, buying program, leveraging requirements is Smart Buy. So can you tell us in your own words what Smart Buy is and what's going on there?
Definitely. So Smart Buy has been around since about 2005. Smart Buy stands for Software Managed and Acquired on the Right Terms. And I like to talk about Smart Buy 1.0 and Smart Buy 2.0, or legacy Smart Buy and the next generation Smart Buy. And the reason is there's a significant shift in what we're doing and in what we're focusing on in Smart Buy. So the legacy Smart Buy, which was a very successful program, is a very successful program. Since 2005, we've saved our customer agencies over $1 billion in cost avoidance. What Smart Buy did and does is we gather requirements from groups of federal agencies, and then we issue blanket purchase agreements, BPAs, that
off the GSA schedule.
Off the GSA schedule, exactly. And those BPAs, so we compete the requirements that a group of customers comes in with. For instance, it might be cybersecurity tools, situational awareness, incident response. We call it SARE in our shorthand. Situational awareness, incident response tools, or geospatial tools, office management tools, database management tools, et cetera. We gather the requirements from a group of agencies, and then with those requirements, we also incorporate federal standards. So when we did data at rest encryption to help enforce the OMB memos about encrypting PII, personally identifiable information, the GSA schedule, of course, is commercial products and services. But federal information processing standards sometimes exceed those commercial products capabilities. So when we do a Smart Buy, we make sure that we're including Federal Desktop Core Compliance, FDCC. We make sure we're including FIPS processing standards so that if we have a cybersecurity tool and it has an encryption capability, that has to be FIPS compliant. And that enables us to raise the bar on security, to eliminate some of the good commercial products that don't meet federal standards, and then focus in on competing those that are within that window. And then we negotiate down the price. So we end up with a BPA that's competitive, that has a number of awardees. In many cases in the software area, the resellers who sell win the BPA and sell the products to the government are actually small businesses. So in fact, of 24 Smart Buy agreements in place right now, 15 are actually held by small businesses. So the majority of our BPAs are small business awards.
I'm Larry. Right now, we're higher up on the break, so we're going to go to segment 3.0, I guess, to keep the theme going, and we'll be back to talk more about Smart Buy. But right now, we do need to take a break. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is Roger Waldron. We'll be right back.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Larry Hale. Larry is the director for the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service in GSA. And Larry, when we took our break, you were talking about Smart Buy 1.0, and you're talking about leveraging requirements across the board and how you guys compete the requirements and establish BPAs. You got any, additional thoughts about how that working and or examples of where it's been pretty successful?
Well, I think some of the best examples are database tools, cybersecurity tools like antivirus that everybody has on their desktop. Those are areas where we've been very successful at saving money, but the transition to Smart Buy 2.0 is that we were very proud of saving more than $1 billion over the life of the program, but what we didn't realize, frankly, in focusing on those specific requirements for those specific group of customers, was that we weren't going after the big spend. And one of the things that that the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative helped us to become more aware of, we started to analyze how large the federal software market is, and how much of that is commodity software versus specifically developed tailored software. And there's over 6 billion, estimates are over 6 billion a year that federal government spends on software, commercial commodity software. So when we say we saved more than a billion over a period of 5 years, we were doing good. But we could be doing so much more good if we were going after and working with the large agencies who are spending large amounts of money on the major software publishers' products and services.
So, and who are those large agencies?
Veterans Administration, Homeland Security. Smart Buy, by the way, is a partnership with DoD. So there's, and I'd be.
They're called the Enterprise Software Initiative.
Yes, ESI. And yeah. ESI and Smart Buy are we share our. So if ESI has a BPA, civilian agencies can buy through Smart Buy and get access to DoD BPAs, and defense agencies and defense branches of service can buy GSA Smart Buy through ESI. So it's a total brand sharing. Agreement, co-chairing agreement.
Sure. So in Smart Buy 2.0, what is sort of the big picture sort of strategy that you're looking at?
Well, the idea of Smart Buy 2.0 was to identify where the largest federal spend was in software, in commercial software, and look for opportunities to work with the big customers who get the leverage, who get the who have the buying power. Where calling it an anchor tenant concept, because we're working with what we found, and the data in Smart Buy 1.0 proves this out. Where we went in and negotiated with committed customers and a committed level of buy, that's where we got the best savings. When GSA, you know, we can talk about aggregated buying but unless you have committed volume coming to the table, you don't get the best savings. You get, you know, token savings, if you will. So we're working.
I have to stop you right there. That is, you know, that is a fundamental aspect, and it's one thing that we've been talking about a lot lately, just in the community, is, you know, BPAs that have real commitments to utilize or volume commitments are the key to the government getting the best deal. So I think you're really onto something there.
Absolutely. Thank you. And so we have a commodity team. Part of the strategic sourcing structure, we have a commodity team with 16 agencies representing about 85% of the federal software spend. We're working very closely with that commodity team to address their spends with the large software publishers. We've identified the major software publishers where the federal government spends its money, and we're bringing them to the table along with our anchor tenants. So we're identifying where the spends are, where the opportunities are for new negotiations, and working with our customer agencies as anchor tenants to come to the table with GSA and the major publishers to address and identify opportunities for savings.
I had another question, and how does that, you know, with regard to Smart Buy, just thinking about it in your description of it, how does it, you know, play with, let's say, Alliant, or you know, when somebody's asking for, you know, a infrastructure solution on Alliant or DHS Eagle or Eagle 2, when the agencies are buying that way, how does the Smart Buy agreements for the software, how do they sort of what's the interplay between those?
That's a great question. So my office is part of the Office of Strategic Programs. I understand that you may be talking to my boss, Mark Day, soon. The GWAC programs, GSA's GWAC programs, are in the Office of Strategic Programs. So we're partner programs in the same group. So these agreements that the Smart Buy agreements that we're putting in place with the publishers, the licensing, one of the things so the agency is the licensee. One of the keys to the question you asked about using Alliant or using integrators is who is the licensee? It's key for the government agency to be the licensee for the software licenses so that if they transition, if their integrator, if they change prime contractors, something like that with their GWAC, they still hold the licenses for the software. What's key about our Smart Buy 2.0 is that one of the things that we're putting in place for our anchor tenants is the ability that if we negotiate a better deal, that they have the opportunity to transition from their existing higher cost licenses over to the new Smart Buy licenses. That is an agreement between the government and the publisher that ideally that relationship is between the agency and the license. So it shouldn't matter who their integrator is or what their overall GWAC is for their integration services, as long as the government agency is holding the licenses for the software. Kind of technical.
No, I think I got it. So if you've got an installed base through Alliant or DHS Eagle of software XYZ, and over under the Smart Buy 2.0, you get a lower price for software XYZ, that price can become effective for that same software that's already installed or the license that you have for renewals and that kind of thing over here through the Alliant task order already in place?
You would have the ability. So your existing license is going to be in place for a certain term. It's an agreement. It's a contract.
Sure.
But you would have the ability at a certain point to transition to the lower price Smart Buy license.
Right. Okay.
Seamlessly.
I think we got it. That sounds like a great benefit for customer agencies and an incentive there for trying to further leverage pricing across the government enterprise. You know, so with SmartBuy, what are the next, you know, 2.0, what are the next steps? Are there going to, is it going to be, when do you see this being rolled out, or?
We're in the process right now. We're meeting, our commodity team meets almost monthly with those 16 agencies, as I said, that 80% of the federal software spend. We're gathering information from the contracts that they have right now. So it's very much data driven. We're getting, we're developing an understanding of the spread that these agencies pay for the same products. And it's that gives us the ability to understand what the range is and what the opportunities for savings are. And so that's where we are right now, sort of data gathering, lining up the anchor tenants, identifying the opportunities, the large agencies who are in the process of preparing to negotiate new agreements. We want to gather those agencies together with GSA and go into that process together. So that's the point we're at right now.
Okay, great, Larry. And right now we're at a point where we do have to take our last break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Larry Hale. Larry is the director for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service, GSA. And when we come back, we'll talk. We'll circle back and start talking cybersecurity again, Larry. Okay. So you, so out there, you're listening on Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Larry Hale. Larry is the director of the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service in the General Services Administration. And Larry, when we took a break, we were gonna transition from SmartBuy to talking a little about cybersecurity. And I know one of the areas that you guys are working on is an area where it relates to cloud computing, and that, you know, GSA is big into the cloud, and at the same time, many customer agencies remain, you know, are concerned about just, or any organization is concerned about what security like in the cloud. Can you, and cybersecurity, can you guys talk about, can you talk, excuse me, talk about what you're doing in that area?
Thanks, Roger. Yeah. So cybersecurity has been identified by cloud customers as one of the biggest concerns. And GSA is helping to address that with a program called FedRAMP, Federal Risk Authorization Management Program.
You're a better man than me, Larry, because I couldn't have got that.
The idea of FedRAMP is built on FISMA-based and NIST processes. So the risk assessment, risk management framework is a NIST framework. And the FISMA process that has agencies granting authority to operate for their cyber services, for their computer services. What FedRAMP does for cloud computing is that you get one ATO, authority to operate, and many, many agencies can use those services, as opposed to the old model where every agency would have to do their own ATO. So that's a big step towards addressing the security concerns of the cloud, because it makes it so much more efficient. It cuts down the cost of doing those ATOs, saves government money, and allows customer agencies to take advantage of those cloud services. One of the building blocks of so the cloud program and FedRAMP is just getting started, and in advance of FedRAMP, my office launched a couple of BPAs for cloud services. Infrastructure as a Service was launched, and very soon we're hoping to release a BPA for Email as a Service. When we did the Infrastructure as a Service, there was no FedRAMP. So we had to, GSA had to do the FISMA risk management process to get the ATOs for those vendors. And we did it basically to we did it to the FISMA moderate level, so that customer agencies could use cloud services, cloud infrastructure for web hosting, cloud-based storage, and virtual machines up to the FISMA moderate.
But I have to start. What does FISMA moderate mean?
FISMA.
Okay, I mean, this is really quiz you now, Larry.
FISMA, Federal Information Security Management Act. So the FISMA is the law passed by Congress. There are low, moderate, and high, and it's basically levels of security. So low assurance would be a system that you don't want. You don't. You're not putting a lot of security resources on. It's something that's very, very public facing and not. You don't need to take much care of. And I know I'm mischaracterizing that, but it's a lower level of security. FISMA Moderate is most of the web processes where you have customer or citizen information interacting with the government on a web process using a web service. You'd want to have at least FISMA Moderate for that kind of interaction. And then where there's personally identifiable information, higher security, there's FISMA High. So for the first instance of cloud initiatives in the government, we went up to FISMA Moderate for the security. GSA has granted the authorities to operate the ATOs for infrastructure as a service vendors on our BPA, and we've got a number of agencies using those services, and then the FedRAMP program basically takes that process and formalizes it. So where GSA signed the ATO for infrastructure as a service, now there's FedRAMP. FedRAMP has, in order to calm the customer's potential trepidation about, hey, I'm not going to accept another agency's ATO. This is my system. This is my information. Yeah, right.
That's why people say, oh, I'm going to do my own procurement.
Exactly.
Everybody's unique, right?
So FedRAMP addressed that by having a board that the ATO is actually approved by a representative from DOD, a representative from Department of Homeland Security, and a representative from DHS. So it's called the Joint Authorization Board, GSA, DHS, and DOD. I think I said DHS
twice. Let's just make it clear. It's GSA, DOD, and DHS.
Correct.
Right? Okay,
yes.
There you go.
And that's the Joint Authorization Board. So basically those three form this board and grant the provisional authority to operate for cloud security services under FedRAMP, and then agencies are able to accept that the security is done to a certain standard, and if they have their own specific, call it a delta, their own specific difference between what was done as a shared service and what they need for their agency, then they're only using their resources for a smaller security assessment, not the common shared service.
And is that the key to greater cloud? I mean, is it fundamentally the security issue that being addressed that will, you know, I guess, expand the market for cloud services in the federal space? Is that the key piece of the pie there, or piece of the puzzle?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because that's a perfect segue into our recent RFI on Cloud Broker. So security was a huge barrier to cloud adoption, and FedRAMP is doing a great job of addressing that security barrier. But cloud computing, when you really get down to it, it's really a different business model more than a different technology. The idea of cloud computing is that you pay for what you use, and you have that flexibility. You can increase and decrease as you need it, and so you don't have that capital investment of a bunch of servers and data centers that you own the hardware and the software licenses, and you have the maintenance, et cetera, all that overhead. With cloud computing, you're consuming your computing as a service, and that's the key phrase, the as a service, software as a service, infrastructure as a service. So you're consuming it as a service, and you're paying for only what you use, and when you don't need it, you don't pay for it when you're not using it. So the barrier right now is how to provide that flexibility through government procurements. And BPAs are a good first step, and certainly we have learned so much from the Infrastructure as a Service BPA. But BPAs are, once they're awarded, they're in place for a period of time. It's very difficult to add new services to a BPA. You'd have to recompete because you're changing the terms of the procurement. So we need something that has the flexibility to add new services, that has the flexibility to allow for that true unit pricing, where you are really only paying for what you use and you can add more and take it away. So GSA recently issued a request for information, an RFI, for Cloud Broker. And we had an industry day a couple of weeks ago. It was so well subscribed that we had to shut down registration. We filled our room. We had to, some of our GSA partners who wanted to come and hear, we had to say, no, this is industry day, and we need to fill the room with industry people. There was a waiting list.
Sure. That's
so,
great.
We're actually the responses to the RFI close on September 7th. So we're anticipating a wealth of information, but the idea is that we're looking for that capability to give us that flexibility to really open up the floodgates of government access to cloud computing.
Right, and Larry, I hate to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you: do you have the information about where the RFI is located, so that anybody who's listening could get that
yes.
that and respond?
Yes. If you go to gsa.gov, that's www.gsa.gov/cloud. You can have access to the information on the RFI. The RFI was also issued on FedBizOps, so it's out there in a number of places.
So that's really, from a procurement perspective, and me being a procurement geek, it's really interesting. It's you're trying to think about how you can better, create a model to better acquire, from your perspective, these services, or in looking at different approaches, and that's the feedback you want from industry as well.
Absolutely right. We're looking for those models that would give us that flexibility and allow for that true unit pricing and portability between cloud service providers, all those things that our customers are bringing to us and saying, this is what I really need in order to make the leap into cloud.
Well, Larry, I hate to say this, but I need to end the show today. But I want to thank my guest, Larry Hale. Larry is the director for the Center for Strategic Solutions and Security Services at the Federal Acquisition Service at the General Services Administration. Thank you for being on the show, Larry, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.